Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. On today's program, Yellow Springs poet Martha Bush stops by for a chat on Conrad's Corner, and David Romick with the Dayton Education Association gives us the local perspective on a national education project. Up first, holiday shopping will be the highlight of the next Downtown Dayton Art Hop on December 2nd. Three businesses have opened this week thanks to a pilot project of Activated Spaces, which is a collaborative effort of Up Dayton, Generation Dayton, and the Greater Downtown Dayton Plan. To learn a little bit more about Activated Spaces and their history, I spoke with Scott Murphy of Up Dayton.
The project started in January, and we kicked off with first looking to put the work of local artists in storefronts downtown. So they've had two rounds of what we call the street level team, and now we're moving into the second phase, which we're calling the pop-up project, which is working to actually fill those storefronts with retail tenants. And so a group looking at a variety of strategies to bring life to downtown storefronts.
It sounds like a great idea. How's the response been?
It's been great. People have really noticed downtown. So we have property owners that didn't originally participate in the street level project asking to get artwork in their storefronts. It's definitely building a buzz, and certainly with the tenants taking it to the next phase, I think that's even more exciting.
And it's certainly a boon for the artists as well.
Oh, absolutely. It's a great opportunity for them to show their work. And as part of the street level project, they've actually had the 10 artists for each round participate in what the team calls the People's Choice Awards. So it's a great opportunity through the project to get their artwork seen and potentially installed at a longer term basis in a downtown establishment.
And so events like First Friday coming up on December 2nd is really a perfect way for you to continue the work that you're already doing.
Oh, absolutely. We're actually organizing an open house for our three pop-up shops. So we're going to first collect over at Oregon Express, and then we'll be moving over to our two shops on Fifth Street for a little bit, and then heading over to Beauty Box over on 116 West 5th, and then hosting an after party at right next door at 110 West 5th. So we try and get people moving around to the different shops, get to see what they have for sale, and also just experiencing various aspects of First Friday, which is just a great event.
How can listeners get more information on what Up Dayton and Activated Spaces is doing?
They can go to activatedspaces.org. On our website, you'll find information about what the street level team is up to, what our pop-up team is up to. You'll learn more about our three pop-up shops here coming up for the holidays. And if you want to get involved, you can also email getinvolved@updayton.com.
Scott Murphy with Activated Spaces, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thanks. Really appreciate it.
One of the new retailers taking part in Activated Spaces' pop-up shop project is Peace on Fifth. It's a satellite of the Dayton International Peace Museum store. They sell fair trade, slave-free, and eco-friendly merchandise. Abigail Reed is the assistant manager.
All of our products in this store have a story behind them, and our job is to engage people in a conversation about what fair trade is and why this affects people for good. We also have eco-friendly products, why this affects artisans who make them, how it increases their energy potential, how they can access energy, solar energy, we're getting solar panels in, how it positively impacts their lives, their communities, and the world as a whole.
Let's talk a little bit more about fair trade sales.
The reason why we have fair trade at the Peace Museum is because we believe that empowering people to make a living for themselves helps create peace in the world. The UN and the Fair Trade Federation, they say that one of the best ways to promote peace in the world is to make sure that people have food in their stomachs, to make sure that they have a way to provide for themselves and their families and their communities. So by us selling fair trade items in our store, we're promoting that idea of peace, of how we can help create peace with something as easy as just buying a T-shirt or buying a candle. You know, it's a really easy thing for people to get involved in. It's fun, and it just makes people feel like they're making a difference in the world, which they are.
So with First Friday coming up, it's going to be real easy for people to get to know you. They just need to do some of their holiday shopping downtown.
Yeah, we have excellent gifts, you know, things for yourself, things for family, things for kids. We have toys and really fun stuffed animals. We're getting fair trade sports equipment in, which is something we're really excited about. We have the T-shirts. We have bags. We have fair trade wrapping paper, which is absolutely gorgeous. We have gift bags. Everything you need for the holiday season, we have.
Have you been involved with other First Friday events?
No, this is our first Friday, so we're really excited about it, and we're excited to see who comes out, and hopefully a lot of people do, and we can talk to them about fair trade, about the products we have, and, you know, they can spread the word, and we can all make a great impact on these people's lives.
Abigail Reed with Peace on Fifth, part of the First Friday exhibit. But next Friday, Abigail, thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks so much.
The Downtown Dayton Art Hop takes place from 5 to 10 p.m. Friday, December 2nd. Find out more about all of this at updayton.com. This is WISO Weekend. The National Education Association says they are challenging the status quo in education, leading reform, and taking advantage of new opportunities and resources to close student achievement gaps and increase college and career readiness. They're doing this through the Priority School campaign. I spoke with Dayton Education Association President David Romick about the local impact of this program.
The Priority Schools campaign is a campaign which is sponsored and run by the National Education Association to give local leaders and local districts some additional tools and additional resources to work on what traditionally are called struggling schools. NEA chooses to call them priority schools, and begin to have some success within those schools and basically turn them around.
And what qualifies those schools that have been singled out for this program?
Dayton Public Schools is entering its second year of schools and school improvement. The first year, we had three high schools, Belmont High School, Dunbar High School, and Meadowdale High School, were all put in school improvement status and then qualified for NEA Priority Schools assistance. So I had partnered with the Priority Schools campaign from NEA. They came into town, did some looking around, did some talking to people, and Belmont High School is thus far the one in Dayton that's really taken off with the program.
And just to clarify, the priority schools were identified for testing levels of students, or?
Yeah, it's a variety of things that come off the state report card determining whether a school is operating successfully or not.
And a little bit more about the campaign. It involves partnerships with parents and communities and businesses. Can you tell us a little bit about those partnerships and how you're working together with those groups?
Absolutely. We are actually pretty early in the NEA Priority Schools work in Dayton. But thus far, they've made two visits to Dayton, Belmont High School in particular, the second visit. We have sat down with the principal and staff of Belmont High School and identified some concerns, some deficiencies, some areas that need to be improved. One of those is community relations, you know, more parent involvement, more community involvement for the school. And actually that's come into perfect timing because Belmont High School is scheduled to move down the road into a new building this coming winter. And we'd like to get some community sponsorship behind that to then continue involvement with parents and the community in the school environment.
Now, I see that attendance and behavioral problems are listed as some pretty big obstacles to academic achievement. Can you elaborate more on that and what else is involved there?
Sure. Teachers and parents alike know that if kids aren't in school, they're not learning. We can't teach kids that aren't there. And if they're not there because of discipline concerns, or they're just not there because they're not showing up, that becomes an attendance concern. Belmont High School in particular had some huge attendance problems on both sides a couple of years ago. But with the new administration that was placed in the building, the entire focus for the 2009-2010 school year was straightening around the behavior, getting the students there, and I call it putting a school where there once was none. So that whole first step of straightening around behaviors and attendance was, by David White, principal, deemed necessary before any academic undertakings could take place. And his strategies there with his team and the staff, which I was a part of that year, proved to be very successful.
And can you tell us a little bit about how that work was done? It seems that parents would certainly need to be heavily involved with attendance and behavioral problems as far as the students go.
It is the case. The first step, though, was getting the staff to buy into what the program was going to be. And the program was going to be what was called the five B's, be prepared, be responsible, et cetera, et cetera. The staff bought into that, and it was then the staff's job to get that information down to the student level and let them know that here's a new set of expectations at Belmont High School. And through communications from the school and newsletters and parent meetings and a number of other avenues that went on early in that first year, parents were informed that there's a new program here at Belmont High School. This is the way we're gonna bring Belmont High School back. And here are the expectations for your students. I think clear and direct communication of those expectations. And then enforcement of those expectations was the key there.
And was that message accepted right away from the students, or did you have to keep chipping away at it?
It wasn't accepted right away, but strangely, the staff was, I think, starved for some law and order there. And there was enough of the student body that also felt that way. They wanted a school there. They were tired of coming to school in what some might perceive as unsafe conditions. With enough of the student body who also looked at that as a real positive change, it really didn't take as long as I anticipated to get that turned around and on the tracks.
And I apologize for falling back on this again, but it always seems when you're trying to change behavior of students that it goes back to the parents and maybe some of the conditions in the home. Is anything like that involved with this program? Extra communication with parents or any attempts outside the norm?
Yeah, absolutely. We have looked this year at different and more inviting ways to communicate with parents. There is underway a plan to install an information kiosk within Belmont High School itself, including a computer system set up where parents could just come into the lobby, say, for example, log on to the computer, look up the student schedule, print that out, take that around the building with them, talk to teachers, and get information about the school. There's also been an additional push in terms of newsletters and parent information being sent home with students and being mailed home. So, yeah, it's been above and beyond what the ordinary communication is from a school to home.
And how has the response from parents been?
It's been slow. Belmont's in a unique part of town where traditionally, and particularly at the high school level, where kids go off to high school, there's dramatically less involvement with parents than there are with, say, elementary school kids. So it's been slow, but the word has spread, no doubt, throughout the community that the old Belmont High School is no longer, and we're on a positive track out there. And, this is really becoming something to be involved in.
And you're also looking to not only parents and communities, but businesses in the regions where these schools are located. And how can local business help?
Local business can help. And again, this is where the NEA Priority Schools campaign comes in, because we, as a local teachers union, and certainly the Dayton Public Schools, neither have the time nor the resources to go out and effectively recruit businesses to be involved with the school district or with a particular school. But businesses can certainly help just by becoming involved. Know what's going on at Belmont High School. Know that this is transforming the actual community out there in the Belmont area. And in addition, as events are planned, community events which partner the community and the school out there, any kind of participation by businesses from providing merchandise or advertising or sponsoring a particular event, just really at this point, any kind of involvement by the business community can't help but be a positive.
Well, how old is this program?
Priority Schools?
Yes.
I'm not sure how old this program is. Our involvement with it just goes back to the beginning of the last school year, because that's when the first three Dayton Public Schools were identified as schools that fell under the school improvement umbrella.
And are there other steps to this program that you still need to roll out, or are you pretty much doing everything that's encompassed within the Priority Schools campaign?
No, we've actually just scratched the surface, the tip of the iceberg, if you will, because there's a large English language learners population in that particular area of town who attend Belmont High School. Priority Schools is providing training and in-service for teachers of English language learners. NEA Priority Schools is also looking at the possibility of installing a community sign somewhere on the new Belmont property, just to let the community know, again, through another avenue, what's going on at Belmont High School and ways to become involved. So those are just a couple of things, but as far as what NEA Priority Schools can do, we've just scratched the surface here.
So this will be a continuing effort over the next several years, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I'm early in my potential term as president of the Dayton Education Association, and this partnership is something I'm committed to. And I know the NEARA, they're committed to Dayton as well.
David Romick, president of the Dayton Education Association. Any final comments on the Priority School campaign?
This is really an exciting program. I'm thrilled to be involved. I'm thrilled that the Dayton Education Association stepped out of the box a little bit and through my executive committee was approved to do this. I'm also thrilled with Belmont High School and their leadership and their staff and their students and their willingness to take that step with the union and work to make things better. And over the next several years, I hope that this will become an infectious situation in the Dayton Public Schools, spread from school to school to school, and I believe we're on the right track to turn around the Dayton Public Schools and make Dayton Public Schools the district of choice in the Miami Valley.
David Romick, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Welcome to Conrad's Corner. From time to time, I do interviews with local poets. My guest today is Marcia Bush. Hi, Marcia.
Hi. Nice to be here.
And you are a Yellow Springs resident, right?
I am.
Okay. And you've been around Yellow Springs for quite a while?
Since the early 60s, uh-huh.
And you have recently won an award in a Dayton Metro Library poetry contest.
Yeah, that's right. I won second place in the seniors division, and I would like to note that five out of the six winners in the adult and senior division were in your Tower Poetry Group.
Yeah, I was happy about that. There were six winners, six awards in the senior category, and five of the six are poets whom I read on WISO.
Mm-hmm.
So you entered a poem in the contest.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And do you write with contests in mind?
No, actually, I chose this poem because it's a 20-year-old poem, as a matter of fact, but I was hoping it was relatively timeless, which they read it as. And it's called Grandchild, and the reason I chose it was because it covers three generations: the grandmother, the my son, and my grandson.
And it was related to another poem in the past.
Yes, it was. Oddly enough, I didn't realize the coincidence that would occur. But in the year 2002, I won grand prize in the Paul Laurence Dunbar Memorial Poetry Contest. And that was a poem called Stone Stones. And it's about my son and his being in the Navy out on a carrier. And now the grandson that I wrote about in the winning poem Grandchild is that son of my son. And it's 25 years later, and he is now in the Navy on a carrier in the Persian Gulf.
So the two poems that you have to read are about your son and your grandson, both of whom have been or are in the Navy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And this is the more recent poem?
Yes. It's about my grandson, who I mentioned is now 25. In this poem, he's about 5. Grandchild, though you rise just above my knees, you command my senses, gathering them in your clear brown eyes, where I descend like an underwater swimmer. Beside the baggage carousel, your father, my son, is talking about his mortgage, work, and biking. I scarcely hear him, for I am in too deep to emerge from your trance, waiting for a sign you remember me. I court you with longing looks, whispering promises of presents hidden in my bags, but you hang back, focusing on bright airport crowds, leaving me behind, as I do your father. The L.A. air is hot and packed. Moisture gathers above your temples, a trickle wending its way through dark down, small beads forming above your sculpted lips. Overcoming my strange shyness, I reach down to hold your hand, feeling its fragility in mine. A flight's departure cracks the air. Then all is quiet. In that hushed moment, your hand in mine, I am awash in a sea of generations, knowing the answer to unspoken questions of why I've come to pass this way.
And how long ago was that written?
About 20 years ago, when my son lived on the West Coast, and he now lives in Oklahoma, and his oldest child, the grandson I spoke of, in the poem, is now in the Navy, as was my son.
And do you still recall the feelings from that time 20 years ago or so?
Yes. As I read the poem, it stirs up afresh the feelings of being with my grandchildren and anticipating watching them grow up. Has been a joy. It's harder now that they're older because they're independent and off on their own course and in their lives and the paths that they've chosen. So, and they're all rather far away, so I don't get to see as much of them as I did when they were children.
Right at the end, knowing the answer to unspoken questions of why I've come to pass this way. Could you phrase a question and an answer?
Well, it's just a wonderful mystery watching it all unfold. I never would have anticipated that I would have had 12 grandchildren, all of them so different from each other. And like this son, this grandson is progeny of my daughter-in-law, who is Mexican, and my son, who is a gringo, as they say, and he's just a beautiful blend of the two ethnic groups, and it's just a continual unfolding of mysterious forces to me that as I watch these children grow up in this world.
I can go along with that. I mean, the poet means what the reader gets out of it, and I like the idea, and I like the phrase, and I wondered, what were yours? And
mm-hmm. Actually, the other poem that I'm going to read I won with the grand prize in the Paul Laurence Dunbar Poetry Contest is just the sort of thing that answers that in a strange way. It preceded the poem about my grandchild, and it's about my son going into the Navy. But the interesting part behind this story is that, which is revealed in the poem, the interesting part is that when my son graduated from high school, he signed up and went directly into the Navy, and there was, on his father's side, there was no military for three generations back, and on my side, I was adopted, and that's the grandparents that he knew, and there was no military on that side. He always had been very interested in planes, missiles, ships, and everybody said, oh, it's just a passing fancy. But then he wound up going into the Navy. After my parents, my adoptive parents died when I was 27, both of them, and I traced my my blood family, my biological family, it turns out that my father and my uncle, there was just two sons in that, my father and my uncle were both naval combat pilots and flew in the Aleutian campaign in the Korean War. And my father died, unfortunately, before I ever traced him as a test helicopter pilot in the early Nassau program. And not only that, but there's a sister and a brother on my maternal side who are naval intelligence officers, and there's a uncle on my maternal side that's in the Marines, and it traces all the way back to my original name was Arnold. It traces all the way back to Benedict Arnold.
Wow.
So it turns out that there's just strong military genetic component here.
Okay, well, let's have the other poem. And this is about your son.
Yeah, it's called Stones, Stones. You have always thrown stones. It's bred into your bones, your legacy through male bloodlines, their magnetism a mystery to your mother. You began by dropping a single stone over and over, intrigued with its retrieval from the relentless tug of earth. You graduated to throwing pebbles on a beach, gravel from the driveway, hands full of power, pelting multitudes of phantom armies. Gathering control, you launched them in the sky to pierce a cloud, or failing that, to see how high the missiles of your strength would go. After heights came depths, down, down into chasms and canyons, twin with your stones, conquering the fear of how far we fall and still remain stone. Flat stones skipping over water, proving you can perform small feats of magic. Round stones cast in pools, watching ripples of your potency expand. Sharp stones flung at passing cars, risking the challenge of retribution. The stones they offered you in high school were weightless as an empty text, offering no sense of power, inducing you to join the Navy, where you floated for 5 years astride a 100,000-ton carrier, men thrusting planes off the deck, planes loaded with stone missiles and bombs, assembled and inspected by you. Your son was born on land while you were out to sea, but wordlessly you gifted him with stones, stones, hurled through his tree down the male millennium into his waiting hands.
That is a quite clear connection, both in subject matter and in feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a fascinating combination of poems past and more recent.
Yeah, interesting enough, I remember the comment when I won that poem, I called my son and I read him the, I sent him a copy too, but I read him the poem over the phone, and he had another line, and his son was on the other phone listening. And my son said something about, well, thanks, Mom, that's a really good poem about me. And Jason, my grandson, said, no, it's not about you, Dad. It's about me. And sure enough.
it is.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Marcia. I congratulate you on having two poems, both winning contests. And I thank you for reading them. They are very moving pieces of writing.
Thank you, Conrad.
Marcia Bush.
That's it for this week's edition of Why So Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks to all of our guests. Coming up next on member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, The Book Nook.
Celebrate the holiday weekend with American Roots live at the 2011 National Heritage Fellows Concert with Hawaiian slacky guitarist Ledward Kapana, Piedmont bluesman Warner Williams, and Big Chief Bo Dallas of the Wild Magnolias. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
This afternoon at 2 on 91.3 WYSO.
They say variety is the spice of life, so tune into Alphorhythms, the one spice you've been missing. Each Sunday night from 8 till 11 p.m., your hosts Jerry, Julie, and I will take you on a sonic journey, venturing through the best in new age ambient, electronic, and otherwise worldly music, safely returning you in time for the morning commute. Your Sunday nights just got a lot more interesting. That's Alphorhythms, Sunday evening from 8 till 11 p.m., right here on 91.3 WYSO.